through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome back into Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross with you. We're joined right now by Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest. Hello, Joe.
Hey, how's it going? I think every time I'm on the show, you guys use the same bump coming out of commercial break. I'm just vibing over here.
Oh, good.
I love it.
Perfect. Well, I'm glad that we're putting you in a better mood because I'm sure that there were some head-scratching moments for you watching the game. Now, I know that you aren't necessarily watching as a fan because you're covering them, but it has to still be really frustrating. Can you just walk through specifically some of the questions you had or concerns you had with that one fourth down moment in the game? You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think in the moment that was so inexplicable that it makes you kind of throw your hands up of what's happening. How is this happening again? Because you play back in your mind all the times this team has struggled with game management and play clock and situational football. And immediately week 17 against the Niners, when you're 1 yard away from less than 1 yard away from winning the NFC West, and you have a delay of game penalty. And then with the Damian Lewis injury, they had more than 2 minutes, about 2.5 minutes, to get a play in, get out of the huddle, get to the line of scrimmage, and go execute. And so the fact that they couldn't get that done, the mechanics were so screwed up that they couldn't just accomplish that. And you know how tough the Rams are, as it was shown all game long. But you're down 10 points, and they still had a chance, even with as ugly as it was. And that is just so completely self-induced that is just it's insane. It's inexcusable. And then what makes it worse is that Pete Carroll, after the game and then again on Monday, downplays it into this ho-hum like, yeah, I saw the play clock winding down. I wasn't too worried. Punting's no big deal. You're just giving up a possession in the final 10 minutes of your season with your season on the line in a do-or-die situation. And on top of that, now we find out that he was battling Brian Schottenheimer over the play call, which is an extra can of worms that you open. And so comprehensively, that's such a frustrating moment that I think you can kind of boil the entire game down to that moment, in my opinion, and say they just didn't show up. They laid an egg, and it's really discouraging from a team that won 12 games in the regular season and won its division.
So, Joe, now you talk about some of those behind-the-scenes conversations that have kind of come to light, and Pete Carroll outlines the way to win or be better in 2021, that they want to bring back a majority of their roster, and we'll ask a question about that. But, you know, more so, I think I'm curious about this offense. If Pete Carroll is as involved as he is in terms of the style of offense in which they play, the in-game coaching decisions, what do you think of what Pete Carroll had to say about the direction that this offense should be going in here in 2021?
I think he has to stop meddling. I mean, if Brian Schottenheimer is your guy, and whether you decide he is and you keep him, or whether you decide you're going to bring in somebody else, you have to have someone in that role that you can let them operate. Micromanaging in the highest pressure situations is such comprehensively bad leadership in any capacity, whether you're a football coach or whether you're in any industry. I mean, there's no situation where someone's trying to execute their job in a moment of peak pressure and consequence, and they've got someone in their ear saying, nope, can't do that. And you're saying, wait a minute, what are we doing here? And then it all fails and flops tremendously and goes up in flames. So, yes, I do think that him and Brian Schottenheimer need to have some long, hard conversations and figure out, is this a relationship they want to continue? But if Pete Carroll wants Brian Schottenheimer to be the guy and Brian Schottenheimer wants to stay, those are the situations that just can't happen.
Now, Joe, you say that. Now, do you think that that's actually what's going to happen? Because I have my doubts.
Yeah, no, I don't. I think there's an element of, you know, I kind of wrote this yesterday. Pete Carroll is who he is, and he's not going to be able to change all of his stripes, hope as much as Seahawks fans want. You know, kind of like we talk about with Russell Wilson, always going to be a guy who creates this off-script magic that pretty much no other quarterback in football, very few, can create. But he's going to be a quarterback that generally takes some sacks that are infuriating. So you take the good with the bad. Pete Carroll, for all of his benefits of being a leader of men and of being the ability to build a program that is resilient and bought in, and consistently successful. He has his warts that are just part of his DNA. And to me, it goes back to some of the philosophy stuff that we could potentially get into, but he spoke at length about. But it's also this. He wants to have his finger in everything and feel like this is his team. And there's a reason why he, you know, went in and adjusted the offense and made it more conservative the second half. There's a reason why he wanted to be involved in that decision with Brian Schottenheimer on fourth down. And I think it's just as much, you know, Seattle wanting to figure out if they want Shoddy back as Shoddy wanting to figure out if this is a place and something he can deal with, whether he feels like he's being constrained in any certain way. So, yeah, I think, Jake, to your point, I wouldn't say I would be you know, holding my breath that all of a sudden that's going to change drastically.
Now, I know questioning authority, especially questioning a coach, is incredibly taboo in many places, but most especially in football. But it seems like it's something you have to do to tell Carroll no or to tell him, you know, to fix something. How do you do that? I mean, realistically, is there anyone in the building that can do that? Is that something Russell Wilson has to do?
Yeah, Pete Carroll mentioned on Monday that, you know, there are coaches and players that he's been with, and he wants all the honesty. He wants people to come to him. And you know, again, we don't know what those intimate conversations are like and how often they are happening and if that, you know, results in meaningful change. Who knows? But, again, there's so much to be alarmed by, you know, whether it's philosophy, roster construction in terms of the priorities of where investment or where you're investing your free agent dollars and draft picks. Whether it's being in the middle of a game where Russell Wilson is under siege more than 50% of his dropbacks, and yet you can continue to dial up straight drop, straight drop, straight drop, as opposed to any sort of wrinkle that might potentially give you some sort of counterpunch to what the Rams are doing. I think it's incredibly alarming.
Joe, I want you to answer honestly. Can this team win a Super Bowl with the trio they have right now of Pete Carroll, John Schneider, and Russell Wilson?
Man, it's tough, especially after they regressed this year and got embarrassed so badly. You know, like that wasn't a team that was ready to compete for a championship. I mean, that 30-20 scoreline it wasn't even that close as what that indicates. And so my gut says no, but you don't want to be a victim of the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, but so I don't want to say definitively no, but man, it's hard right now. I think, again, it's going to take some serious soul searching and figuring out what concessions need to be made, what adjustments need to be made, because they should be able to. Like, Pete Carroll is a more than capable head coach. Russell Wilson, as we've seen year after year, one of the best quarterbacks in football, even though he didn't play necessarily like it down the stretch and in that postseason game. John Schneider is one of the best GMs in football. That trio should be able to get it done, but given the roster they've had at their disposal over the last several years, not being able to make it back to the NFC Championship game, is alarming. Even with you tie in the caveat of it's really hard, it's an absolute challenge, but that's the lens that this team is viewed through, and that's how they should want to be viewed. That's how their players should want to be viewed, because that's what it's like being at the top of the mountain. So I would say that, you know, it's hard to say right now given what we saw on Saturday.
Joe, there you talk about the ability to get back to a Super Bowl. We've talked about philosophy. You also wrote an article about 12 Seahawks who could be gone in 2021. And there's a lot of big names there. And Pete Carroll talked about how he wants to try and keep as much of this group back again in 2021. What are some of the obvious players that you think they have to bring back in order for them to really compete again?
Jamal Adams is the first priority. You got to get him re-signed. He's not going to play a snap on his fifth-year option, nor should he. That's common practice by an NFL player. I totally get that. But you don't want that to linger and become a storyline of maybe things getting contentious and going south. I think Carlos Dunlap, you have to find a way to keep him. He was such a catalyst to your defensive turnaround that, you know, even if you decide you can't pay him $14 million, I mean, you got to find a way to keep him, because it was just so obvious once he got into the fold and, you know, everyone else took a step forward, and guys like Puna Ford and Jaron Reed get credit. Benson Mayo, even, they all get credit for playing better down the stretch, but it's hard to ignore when that switch was flipped. And it was pretty significant when Dunlap got into the fold. They have a tough decision with KJ Wright. He was a great player, but are they going to be able to afford him with Jordan Brooks, you know, deserving of a chance to be in a full-time role? to me, it's so much less about personnel because I view it through the lens of this team is underachieving with their personnel. So they have the people in place. If they want to bring those guys back, it's, I think that's okay. But to me, it always comes down to when Pete Carroll continues to say, I'm fine winning 17-14. You are committing to such small margins in any game during the regular season, but especially in the postseason to when you're not having your best day. How do you find those margins to where you're getting an advantage beyond just we're not turning the ball over, we're playing the field position game, and we're hoping we can make the play down the stretch? That, to me, has always been one of my biggest gripes with the Pete Carroll philosophy, that they can't win till the fourth quarter mantra. And until that changes, to me, it's going to be remain an uphill climb in order to get back to an NFC Championship game.
Joe, you've been pretty busy since the end of that wild card game because you've got a couple articles up at NBC Sports Northwest. Another one that I do want to get to, three of the Seahawks' signature flaws. I really like that one. It's a great read. Leads to some good conversation. Before I do that, though, really quickly, some news broke before our show, which was the Seahawks signing John Schneider to a contract extension through the 2027 draft. What's your first reaction to that news?
Not surprised. That's what I expected. I think when my reaction when the whole Lions news was floated, it was John Schneider's looking to get paid. Pete Carroll just got paid. John Schneider's looking to get paid. Now it's got done, and you move forward. You know, again, that's why it's so hard to have the conversation we had a couple of minutes ago. They've got the pieces in place. John Schneider has proven to be one of the best personnel men in the NFL. They'd be foolish to let him walk. And so, yes, I think it was a decision that had to be made. Check that box. Now move into the offseason and restructuring your roster and figuring out where you can improve.
All right. A couple of those.
Joe, just one question before we let you go here. You know, we talk about some of these things that you mentioned, some of these, you know, fallacies and you know, areas that you have to look on and you have to seriously question, and hopefully that they can fix these and they can move forward. I think that there is also another question here, you know, with Pete Carroll talking about needing to run the football. I don't think he's inherently wrong by any stretch about him saying that you have to run the ball more effectively when you start seeing a lot of too high coverage, and that helps out your quarterback, that helps out your offense. It is one of those remedies to fixing the issue. But I do think that there is a question of what do they do moving forward with their offensive philosophy. Do you think that this can work long term between Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, and John Schneider and the group if they take a step backwards and move more towards the version of the 2018-2019 version of this offense?
Man, Jake, I was so confused by so much of what he said because, yes, I get, like, you know, the thought of you run the ball well and then they can't, you know, show you those looks anymore. But, I mean, every defense saw how to neutralize Russell Wilson in the passing game. And so it's going to take being beaten by the passing game in order to change those looks because unless you're absolutely dominant in the running game, like what I compared it to was the Niners in the NFC Championship game against the Packers last year where you don't even have to throw the football. Unless you're that dominant and have a dominant defense to go with it, that's just not – I think to me it's a pipe dream because defense are going to say, all right, you can have those five-yard runs. We're still going to make you convert on third down, and we're going to take away the explosives. And then you go to the other side of it where he's wanting to run more. So there's the element of wanting to be more effective, which I think is harder, easier said than done, but also running more. If you just convert on third down, that problem is already remedied naturally by just being better on third down, which Pete Carroll said was another emphasis. So you don't even have to look at it as, man, we've got to run the ball more. Well, just convert on third down more, then you have longer drives, you have more plays, and all of a sudden you're running the ball more. So, again, I think the focus should be far more on fixing the passing game, getting Russell Wilson back on track, and making sure you have an offensive line that can protect him to a degree in which a game like Saturday, where you just get so comprehensively whooped in the trenches, never happens again.
Joe Fan, bring in the heat. Man, we could keep talking to you for the rest of our segment here. We got to let you go, though. You can check out Joe's work at NBC Sports Northwest. You can also follow him at Joe_Fan. That's Fan with two N's. Thanks so much, Joe.
Hey, Joe, Stacey, thanks for having me. I appreciate you.
Joe, just be ready to keep coming back here all off season, man. We'll have plenty more to chat about, I'm sure.
I'm ready, brother. I appreciate you.
See ya. All right, let's get to NFL headlines. The Raiders have hired Gus Bradley as their defensive coordinator, moving forward with him. Not Ken Whisenhunt.
I was going to say,
Not Ken Whisenhunt, which is what their graphic that they tweeted very briefly and since deleted had a picture of. The two look somewhat similar, so I'll give them that. If you were just to look immediately, you'd be like, okay. You know, a little bit older, some scruff.
Sure.
The baseball cap.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah. Come on. He's your defensive coordinator. He's one of the most important positions, and you get that wrong. But regardless of that, I will be very curious to see how this goes. I believe Gus Bradley is a fantastic defensive coordinator. He's a fantastic coach that is very, very highly regarded. And even, you know, departing from the Chargers, there was nothing but positive things said about Gus Bradley, the way that he ran that side of the ball. But the one thing that remains is that any disciple of Pete Carroll in this cover three scheme, the one thing remains that these defenses have to have in order for them to be effective is pass rush. Mm-hmm. And for the Raiders, they had one of the worst pass rushing units in the NFL this last season. And so, as we've seen with here in Seattle, if you don't have the pass rush to go with this cover three scheme, it's going to be really, really hard to be effective. So for Gus Bradley, the priority number one, along with Mike Mayock and John Gruden, is figuring out how you can improve that pass rush so you can have your four beat their five and you can play and sit back and drop seven. That is going to be the most important thing for them to work to figure out, or else Gus Bradley and his cover three scheme is just not going to work there in Oakland.
Associated Press sports writer Josh Stubow wrote a tweet that he sent like less than 24 hours ago that's been circulating, where he says, here's the list of NFL coaches who have missed the playoffs the past three seasons and are still employed by their current team, John Gruden. only name listed.
Well, obviously they signed that 10-year deal, yeah. And for them to finish the way that they did is certainly not up to his standard or up to the standard of any NFL franchise. But with that 10-year deal and where they were when John Gruden took that job over, I'm not necessarily panicking. I don't know if they've fully committed to their quarterback of the future. And I think Derek Carr has played well at times this season, but until they fully commit to Derek Carr or they commit to another quarterback, that's when I'm going to really judge their franchise as to are they taking the right steps to make themselves a legitimate playoff contender.
Speaking of head coaches and trying to become a contender, the Texans have officially requested an interview with Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy. But they will not be able to interview him until after the Chiefs season ends. For anyone who's been following this saga in Houston, ownership reportedly told quarterback Deshaun Watson, hey, guess what, Deshaun? You know what? You matter so much to us. You signed this extension. We want you here. And we want your insight for who we hire for GM and head coach. But oops, they didn't end up consulting him when they hired someone for the GM position Casario for the GM position. Reportedly looking for a head coaching position. Now, this is all reported. Patrick Mahomes talked to Deshaun Watson, said all these good things about OC Eric Bieniemy. He's the guy that they wanted him to interview. They did not interview him, so he was reportedly really upset about that. And now it's a little too late. Now they have to wait because that window now has to extend through the postseason or whenever they're out of the postseason.
I mean, this is a fail on every part of the Houston Texans. And if you're Eric Bieniemy and you've seen all the drama that has taken place, do you even really want to interview there?
Yeah, Deshaun Watson, I think there's enough there.
I mean, I guess if you're not getting any real run with any other franchise, that
right.
Your interviews haven't gone well or whatever the case may be, then and this is your one shot to become a head coach, then maybe sure. But, I mean, come on. You already from the beginning know that this franchise doesn't really truly believe in you from the leadership down, or else you would have been initially right away been on that list of interview requests, and you've already done your interview. The only reason why you're getting this interview is because your quarterback advocated for it. So I would be pretty ticked off if I was Bieniemy.
Now, one of the most famous former Texans, Andre Johnson, had this tweet that also is circulating that is pretty interesting. He said, if I'm Deshaun Watson, tagged him, I will stand my ground. The Texans organization is known for wasting players' careers. Since Jack Easterby has walked into the building, nothing good has happened in or for the organization. And for some reason, someone can't seem to see what's going on. Pathetic.
Whew. Wow. Nice. Have we ever seen this? Have we ever seen this to this level? I mean, like...
Where players openly...
Let me rephrase that. From a respectable franchise. The Houston Texans haven't always been a joke of a franchise. They struggled when they initially were joined in the expansion, and then they became respectable, right? They had really good defense. They, at times, had a really good offense. They were getting to the playoffs. This was a good franchise. Not great, but they were good. Respectable. And now they have taken a massive nosedive, and you have a couple people that you can really point to at the top of the leadership and new leadership. How do they continue to let those guys make big decisions?
I think it kind of stems from Cal McNair taking over from his late father. Bob was one of the most powerful owners in the NFL, and he was kind of villainous in his own way, but Cal McNair clearly in over his head here and has allowed this Jack Easterby fella to kind of rule with an iron fist throughout the organization. And Andre Johnson wasn't the only former famous Texans wide receiver. DeAndre Hopkins also quote tweeted Andre Johnson and says, "When Andre speaks, you listen." So it's not just Andre Johnson who feels that way. DeAndre Hopkins does as well.
There is plenty to talk about with the Texans, including Chris Mortensen talking about Deshaun Watson requesting a trade. But there are two former Seahawks, one former Seahawks player, one former coach that I want to talk about in two separate headlines. First story, Cowboys have hired Dan Quinn to be their defensive coordinator. Second story, Saints sign kicker Blair Walsh to their practice squad. What do you think of that? Either story.
Good for them. Good for them. And I do find it fascinating that the Eagles reportedly reached out to Oklahoma head coach Lincoln Riley hours after firing Doug Peterson. I would be very surprised to see Lincoln Riley jump ship at Oklahoma to go to the Eagles. The Eagles are in a really, really bad position in terms of cap, in terms of draft positioning. Overall, I know they have a high draft pick this year, but I'm just saying they have a lot of work to do in order to get their franchise turned around and get back on track. The only reason why it would be intriguing for Lincoln Riley is because of the relationship that he has with Jalen Hurts in that background. But if you're Lincoln Riley, you've got a really good thing going on in Oklahoma. You're comfortable, you're winning, you're getting paid good money. Unless Lincoln Riley has serious NFL ambitions, I would not be going away from that.
All right. As a reminder, if you missed the show, you can always listen via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. You can also download shows there or wherever you download your podcast. So we're talking about the news that John Schneider signed an extension with Seattle to go through the 2027 draft. Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest joined us to talk about some important players that are hitting free agency for Seattle. What's Schneider's next move? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Jake, you know how you have disgusting taste in ice cream?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well,
me?
Yeah.
No.
You like rainbow sherbet?
Yeah. So what's the problem?
Well, that's the problem.
Great taste.
Apparently, 11,000 containers of ice cream have been recalled for having metal shards. I know this is unrelated to what we're talking about, but it just came across my timeline. And we're going to be talking about John Schneider,
terrifying.
The moves he's going to make in free agency. But I wanted to let you know, because I'm positive that you've got like a 3-gallon container of rainbow sherbet somewhere in your freezer.
But I guarantee you those shards are not found in rainbow sherbet.
I think if you're eating rainbow sherbet, you can handle it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that your stomach's tough enough for
like
that.
Like a goat.
Nah, I don't think so. I don't think so. Because you have to have great taste buds to be able to love rainbow sherbet.
Gross. Well, I don't think it's in rainbow sherbet. I also think these are in East Coast City. So, Anyways, moving on. John Schneider signed a however many year contract extension with the Seattle Seahawks going through the 2027 draft. So six. He has a couple big moves to make this offseason. We had Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest on, and he said the number one priority, and I think it's easy to agree with him on this one, is to extend Jamal Adams. You traded two first-round picks. Yes, that is your number one priority. And he also said it's a priority because you don't want any bad blood there. You don't want any
right
kind of waiting for him.
But what happens, though, with this franchise and what they've typically done is they have a very specific timeline as to when they get these types of deals done. What they do when they handle, you know, their 90-man roster, how they handle their own extensions or re-signings, how they handle regular free agency with everybody else out there from around the league, and then when they take care of their own in terms of extensions. What we've typically seen is those extensions happen just before training camp. They happen in the summer, or in Russell Wilson's case, after demanding that it happen at a certain point in time, it then happened in the spring. What I hope happens for the Seahawks through all of that is they kind of learn a lesson in the Russell Wilson contract negotiation situation, is that they are very clear and communicate with Jamal Adams, because we know Jamal just got done dealing with the franchise that was not clear and not forthright in their dealings with him. And that really bothered him, really frustrated him. And we know Jamal Adams is a very emotional player, right? And so what you don't want is bad blood developed or rumors of, hey, Jamal Adams hasn't talked to the Seahawks and doesn't know what's going on with his extension, you know, this, that, and the other, because Jamal Adams will put that out there if that is the case. So I hope that John and Pete are very clear in terms of when the timeline is that they will talk about extension and when they will get that done. I don't care when it is, just be very clear and forthright with Jamal Adams so there's not extra drama when there doesn't need to be.
Our text line is currently split between people saying and Chris Carson and also defending, for some reason, your love of rainbow sherbet.
That's because the people know.
They don't.
The people know what is best. I love our villain.
I don't care.
I love our listeners.
It's disgusting. I'm turning on all of you.
That's
fine. Am I the bad guy because I think cookies and cream is good or mint chocolate chip?
I didn't say they weren't. I think cookies and cream is good. I just love rainbow sherbet. There's nothing wrong with that.
Let's talk about extending Chris Carson. Here's my question, Jake. If Pete Carroll says, hey, we're looking to be more efficient in the run, I don't want to say establish the run, but he's saying you can't just fall into it. You can't just decide to do it. When people are playing us a certain way, we need to be able to respond, and we were not able to respond the way we wanted to, which was running the ball better. But then he didn't commit to extending Chris Carson. I know why he can't. You've got to worry about leverage. It's the same reason Chris Carson isn't going to say, yeah, I really want to be back in Seattle, because he needs to be able to bargain with Seattle and clearly have interest from other teams. The Seahawks have to be able to do a version of that too.
Correct.
But I don't know that I have a ton of faith in Seattle's ability to bring in someone to replace him.
Well, and I think that's fair.
That's
right? They haven't effectively replaced Marshawn Lynch. Chris Carson was their one back to be able to do that. And how many mistakes or errors did they make along the way in trying to replace Marshawn Lynch before they got to Chris Carson, right? And who they have drafted since then after Chris Carson. And I think that's a very, very real critique and criticism. And it also goes to show that it's not easy. It's not easy to just all of a sudden find Chris Carson's replacement who's going to be an effective, legitimate back for you, a every down back that Chris is. But the problem is that it's going to be dependent, just much like Shaquille Griffin. I don't know definitively what their markets are going to be.
Yeah.
Shaquille Griffin, he's got a lot of traits that I think a lot of people would pay for. He's young,
fast,
and he's a hitter. I think there's a lot that people would pay for that, but he's also very inconsistent. So that, to me, also, I believe, caps people's willing to invest, because is Shaquille Griffin truly a legit lockdown corner in this league? I don't think he's proven that. So I don't know if you're willing to pay that type of money for a guy who is a above average corner in this league. A very good corner, but not an elite or great corner. And Chris Carson, guy who's very injury prone, a guy who, when healthy, is very good, right? But that injury history, it takes a massive hit and isn't regarded, for right, wrong, or different, as one of the best backs in this league, right? He's not considered nationally recognized as Dalvin Cook and Ezekiel Elliott and Derrick Henry. And so when you have a fan base that puts out 12 to $14 million for Chris Carson, I just have a hard time seeing it. So I think Carson's range, is, and I've said this from the beginning, is always going to be 8 to, at the highest, $12 million. I think that's the range in which Chris Carson sits at.
And what's your cutoff?
I think 10 is 10? My cutoff. Right. In terms of the cap right now, I think that that is potentially where my cutoff is, depending on what they do with other decisions. I would love to have Carson back at $12 million. I just, if he is injured and on the sidelines, how can you count on that for 4 years? That's my biggest concern.
Fair point. The Mariners are set to begin spring training next month, and we're getting ready. Tune in tonight from 7 to 9 p.m. for the Mariners Hot Stove Show, featuring off-season analysis and interviews with Mariners players and coaches. It's the Hot Stove Show every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. Tonight's player guest will be Marco Gonzalez.
All right. I can't wait to hear that.
All right. Now, I asked about the immediate future, immediate decisions John Schneider has to make. Let's talk big picture for this team. And we're going to have all offseason to do it, but let's get the conversation started next.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Jake and Stacy.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports.
Step back.
Welcome back in to Jake and Stacy. I am under fire for that ice cream take. I regret nothing. We were talking about the immediate moves that John Schneider has to make this offseason. Among them is extending Jamal Adams. You've also got Chris Carson being part of that conversation. Then we were talking about bigger picture, and it made me reflect back to our conversation with Joe Fan, Jake, specifically about how you build a team moving forward that is still complementary to what Pete Carroll wants to do. John Schneider's been good at this. I mean, they have been in tandem with a lot of those moves. It's not like they have tried to move in different directions and haven't been able to do it. I mean, they've been building this team together, making a lot of those personnel decisions together. I think, though, what fans want to know is, will there ever be a fork in the road between what Carroll wants to do with the team and what Russell Wilson wants to do, or what John Schneider wants to do? Or I mean, all these guys are used to working together. They've been doing it for 10 years. But
right.
But what happens if that happens?
Well, that they're not able to work together?
No, I trust that they'll be able to work together. They're professionals who I think like it's clear they really like each other.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me like the right thing to do moving forward is to invest in pieces around this very expensive weapon that you have with Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I think that's the obvious move that you make if you're going to pretty much run it back, right, with the same group, the same roster. What are the areas that you were weak in? I think that that is an area that in the second half of the season really dictated the way that you played and the style of offense that you had and the play of Russell Wilson. The lack of rhythm, the lack of tempo that you had as a group. But, you know, first and foremost, before they get to any of those conversations in terms of adding, not adding, re-signing, extending, you know, those conversations, it has to come to a clear understanding from a philosophical standpoint. Who are you going to be? What is the plan moving forward? And I believe the transformation that you saw, particularly with the Green Bay Packers, right, from 2019 to 2020, was they were able to, excuse me, they were able to get the most out of Aaron Rodgers by allowing him to not only get the most of his opportunities, right? He still was amongst the league leaders in pass attempts, right? So it wasn't that Aaron Rodgers had so few pass attempts compared to his counterparts. He was just outside the top 10. So they were running the ball pretty effectively. But they were also capitalizing on a lot of the schemes in which they were able to get Davante Adams the ball a lot, right? Find a lot of ways to get him the ball in space, in mismatched situations. But then they were also very clear in the way they wanted to operate on offense. I think that the Seahawks, as an offense, were very clear and very intentional in the way that they operated at the beginning of the season. They changed and shifted and morphed in the second half of the season, and they did not have a clear identity, nor was it one that this team was proficient in. So that to me really stands out, is that you suffered as an offense because you wanted to change the way that you approached the game. And they were not proficient in that. That was not something they worked at. That was not something that was a part of their identity heading into the season. And there's moments for evolution and change, but that much evolution, I think, is very hard to go through just like that, snap your fingers in the middle of a season. And so for me, that is going to be the number one priority in terms of this team, because as you have said during the season, Stacey, you can be as good as you want to be on defense. This team, this defense is not talented enough to be the Legion of Boom, to be a truly dominant number one defense in the league that can just beat up on everybody every single week. It can be a really good defense, but it's still going to be about whether your offense can beat defenses like the Rams, can beat defenses like Washington, and not cower and cave in and become a shell of themselves just to barely squeak out a win. That has to change moving forward, and whatever philosophy that is decided, everybody has to be on the same page, and then you can make your decisions from there.
Yeah, and it's not to say that this defense didn't make a legitimate turn, legitimate improvements, and didn't have great games, especially in the second half of the season, nor is it to say that they don't have really good players. I mean, you're talking about all-pro players, Pro Bowl players, multiple-time Pro Bowl and all-pro players when you talk about Jamal Adams and when you talk about Bobby Wagner. I thought K.J. Wright also was incredibly underrated this year, and
100%.
I think Jordan Brooks looks really promising. But I don't love the defensive mindset of going into a game and saying, we're just going to keep them out of it. And you look at the Rams, your offense couldn't put up 23 points. I mean, if you take that out, that interception, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at, can you outscore the Rams? Jared Goff was not great. He had 9 completions and a single touchdown.
Right.
Akers rushed for another. The Rams won because, like they did in the week before, their defense was phenomenal and also scored for you. And then you managed to just get enough with field goals. But, I mean, that is not a back-breaking offense, even though at times with some of those big explosive plays it felt like they could be, and it certainly didn't feel great to have them running all over you. You need to be good enough to do that. I mean, I feel like asking your defense to consistently holding teams to under 23 is a lot. Under 20, the number one defense in the league, the Rams, were holding teams to 19 points on average. That's difficult to do.
And I would love to play this cut that we had with Joe Fan earlier today, when talking about that philosophy and needing to change and needing to look, and some, and Pete maybe falling back into that world of, hey, we need to be a dominant run team and predicate to our defense, because we're going to play better defense. Here's what Joe Fan had to say to that thought of that philosophy.
You know, the thought of you run the ball well, and then after they can't, you know, show you those looks anymore. But I mean, every defense saw how to neutralize Russell Wilson in the passing game. And so it's going to take being beaten by the passing game in order to change those looks. Because unless you're absolutely dominant in the running game, like dominant in the running game, like what I compared it to was the Niners in the NFC Championship game against the Packers last year, where you don't even have to throw the football. Unless you're that dominant and have a dominant defense to go with it, that's just not, I think to me, it's a pipe dream, because defense are going to say, all right, you can have those 5-yard runs. We're still going to make you convert on third down, and we're going to take away the explosives.
So, and I agree with Joe that it's not just going to be about the run game. You can't throw this back to 2013 and 2014. You have to be able to marry it together, and you have to be able to utilize the talent that you have out on the edges with your receivers. You have to utilize the talent that you have with your quarterback and put it all together. And I am all for being multiple, doing whatever it takes to win the game that given week. But you have to have a very dynamic offense to be able to do that. You have to be in a rhythm. You have to be very clear and intentional about who you are, how you're going to get that done. And as of right now, with this Seahawks offense, with this group, they were not clear in that. And I believe that is the reason why the Seahawks are not playing a game this week. That's the reason why Russell Wilson looked the way he did in the second half of the season. And I believe that it's fixable. It's 100% fixable. But you have to be very clear about that intention, and you have to stick with it. You can't run away from it the first sign of trouble.
I also think the first step of fixing it, I agree with you and I agree with Joe here, isn't necessarily a roster move that you make. Oh, we're going to extend Chris Carson or re-sign Chris Carson, or we're going to go decide to draft a running back. It's a conversation that needs to happen, clearly. And I liked his use of the word soul-searching. Figure out who you want to be. All right. There are a lot of conversations to have about this team in the weeks ahead. Oh, man, this is going to be one interesting offseason, Jake. This has been Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. Do not go anywhere. Wyman and Bob is next on 710 ESPN Seattle.